Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've got a really great collection of material you sent us all about Ceylon tea. Today, we're going to dive in and pull out the key stuff from those sources.
Sounds great.
Yeah, our mission here is basically to unpack its history, which is quite something. The unique tastes, what it means culturally, and even the health side of things, all straight from the info we've gathered.
It's exciting, you know, because Ceylon tea, it's really so much more than just, well, a drink.
Right.
When you dig into it like we are now, you find this incredible story. It's about resilience, innovation, all deeply tied to Sri Lanka.
A single plant changing a country's path.
Pretty much, yeah. It's quite a tale.
Okay, so let's get into that. When you think Sri Lanka now, yeah, it's probably those endless green tea fields, right? But that wasn't always the picture. The whole story of Ceylon tea, it actually kicks off with, well, a disaster, a crisis that almost sank the island's economy back in the 1800s.
Exactly. You go back to the early 19th century, Sri Lanka, or Ceylon, as it was called then.
Yeah.
Under British rule, it was all about coffee. Huge plantations, thriving business.
The main thing.
Absolutely the main thing. But then, bam, the 1860s hit. And this this devastating coffee blight, it's a fungus,
just
wiped everything out, swept through the island. And this wasn't just, you know, a bad year. It was catastrophic.
An existential threat, basically.
Yeah, it really was. It forced the planters to scramble to look for something completely different. It was a massive gamble, really. An act of, like, total economic reinvention.
Wow. And leading that, or at least kicking it off, was one specific person, a Scottish guy.
That's right, James Taylor. He's really seen as the pioneer. In 1867, up at the Lulacandera Estate, which is near Kandy, he planted the very first tea seedlings. Just a small plot, kind of an experiment.
It's incredible to think that tiny patch was the start of this global giant of an industry.
Taylor's work, his methods for growing and processing, they show results really quickly. Mm. And by the late 1800s, tea wasn't just an experiment anymore.
It took over.
It totally took over. Large-scale plantations started replacing the old coffee estates. Then came the railways to transport it, modern factories. The whole infrastructure fell into place.
Right.
And pretty soon, Sri Lanka was one of the world's top tea producers, shipping it everywhere.
Okay, so it booms. But here's where, for me, it gets really interesting. It didn't just, like, hit a formula and stick with it. Ceylon tea kept changing, adapting.
Oh, absolutely. It had to. It's a story of constant evolution, really.
So what did that look like?
Well, a few key things.
Okay.
Diversification. Initially, Ceylon was famous almost exclusively for black tea.
Right, the classic cuppa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But tastes change, markets evolve. So Sri Lanka started producing green teas, white teas, oolongs, each needing different processing, different skills.
So broadening the appeal.
Definitely. And then there's the whole move towards sustainability, organic farming, minimizing pesticides, thinking about biodiversity.
That's big now.
Huge. And it wasn't just a minor tweak for many estates. It was a fundamental shift, a real commitment to, you know, greener practices.
And you mentioned earlier, we see these broad types, black, green, but Ceylon tea gets way more specific, doesn't it? This idea of geographical indications.
Yes, that's super important. GIs, geographical indications. Think of it like how champagne has to come from Champagne in France.
Okay, that makes sense. Protected origin.
Precisely. It's not just a label.
Yeah.
It's a legal protection that guarantees the tea is from a specific region in Sri Lanka, grown and processed using traditional methods tied to that place.
So it protects the quality and stops fakes.
Exactly. It links the tea directly to its unique environment, its terroir, and ensures you, the consumer, are getting something authentic.
Okay, so these distinct regions are like the tea's fingerprint.
Yeah.
How do you, as someone buying it, know you're getting that genuine article? There's a logo, right? The Lion logo.
Yes, the Lion logo. Very important. The Sri Lanka Tea Board, set up back in 76, they oversee this.
Okay.
That logo on the pack means it's 100% pure Ceylon tea. It was packed in Sri Lanka, and it meets their really strict quality standards.
So it's more than just a picture.
Oh, yeah. It's a guarantee, a mark of quality, integrity, even national pride. It tells you you're getting the real thing, the high-quality stuff Ceylon is famous for.
So all this history, these standards, these regions, what does it actually mean for the taste, for, you know, the tea in your cup?
It means variety, a whole spectrum of flavors. It all comes down to the island's incredible diversity, the different climates, the altitude, the soil.
The terroir, you mentioned.
Exactly, the terroir. Just like with wine, all those natural factors shape the tea's formal character. Each region develops its own unique signature taste. It really lets you customize your experience.
Okay, let's do a quick tour then, a sensory journey maybe, through these main seven regions. Try and picture the taste as we go.
Let's do it.
First up, Nuwara Eliya. They call it the champagne of tea. Sounds light.
Very light, very delicate. It's grown super high up, over 6,000 feet. Cool, misty. Gives it this beautiful floral aroma, maybe a hint to citrus. Really elegant.
Nice. Okay, then Dimula. Central Highlands, a bit lower down.
Yeah, 3,500 to 5,500 feet. The key here is the distinct wet and dry seasons. That tends to produce teas that are bright, brisk, refreshing. They often have a lovely golden color in the cup.
Good morning tea, maybe.
Perfect morning tea. Then you got Uva. Southeast, similar altitude range to Dimula.
Okay.
But Uva gets hit by specific monsoon winds, and that gives the tea a really unique kind of pungent, exotic flavor. Sometimes a hint of wintergreen. It's distinctive.
Interesting. What about Candy? That's where Taylors start, right? Mid-grown?
That's right. Mid-grown, 2,000 to 4,000 feet.
Yeah.
Climate's more stable there. Candy teas are often known for being full-bodied, quite robust, with lovely malty notes. Classic breakfast tea often comes from here.
Okay, robust. Now down to the lowlands. Rahuna.
Yep. Southern Sri Lanka. Low elevation, warm, tropical climate. That results in a really bold, strong tea.
Mm-hmm.
Dark color, rich flavor. Stands up well if you like milk or sugar.
Right. And Sabri Gamay. Also lowland.
Also lowland. Similar area to Rahuna, but the profile's a bit different. Often described as having a kind of sweet, almost caramel-like taste. So strong, deep amber color, maybe a bit smoother.
Caramel. Interesting. And the last one, Uda Pusalawa.
Uda Pusalawa. It's kind of nestled between Nuwara Eliya and Uva.
Ah, cool.
And so it shares some qualities from both. You get a medium body, maybe not as delicate as Nuwara Eliya, not as pungent as Uva. Hints of rose, maybe menthol. Quite versatile.
Wow. That's quite a range from one small island.
It really is incredible. And knowing this regional difference means you can actually pick a tea that suits your mood or preference. Looking for something light. Nuwara Eliya. Bold. Huhuna. It makes drinking tea a much more intentional choice.
Absolutely. But okay, it's not just about the taste, is it? We heard it's woven into the culture there.
Oh, deeply. It's absolutely integral to daily life in Sri Lanka. It's not just a drink you have. It's a symbol of hospitality.
How so?
Well, offering tea is the first thing you do when someone visits your home. It's served at every social gathering, family occasions. It signifies welcome, connection.
Hmm. And economically. Still huge.
Absolutely vital. The tea industry employs hundreds of thousands of people. You've got the pluckers, often women, harvesting the leaves by hand with incredible skill.
Right.
Then factory workers, people in transport, export. It's a massive employer. And the tea estates themselves. They're beautiful, scenic places. Tourism around tea is also a big part of the economy now.
Okay, so culture, economy. But you also mentioned health benefits. And for you, the listener, this is where it gets really practical. It's good for you, too.
It really is. Ceylon tea is packed with antioxidants. Those are the compounds that fight off free radicals, reduce stress on your body, help your immune system.
Good stuff.
The really good stuff. And there's strong links to heart health. The flavonoids in tea can help with blood pressure, cholesterol levels, keeping blood vessels healthy.
Interesting. What about, say, weight management? You hear that about green tea sometimes.
Yes, particularly Ceylon green tea and oolong tea. They contain compounds that are thought to help boost metabolism and aid in fat oxidation. So, potentially helpful as part of a healthy lifestyle.
And digestion.
Some Ceylon herbal infusions, maybe with ginger or mint blended in, can be really soothing for digestion, help with things like bloating or indigestion.
Okay. And mentally, does it help you focus or relax?
Both, actually. It contains caffeine, obviously, which gives you that alertness and focus.
Yeah.
But it also has something called L-theanine. It's an amino acid mostly found in tea, and it promotes relaxation without drowsiness. It works with the caffeine to give you that kind of calm, alert state. Less jitteriness than coffee, often.
Ugh, that calm focus. I know that feeling. Okay, so we know the history, the amazing variety, the culture, the benefits. Now, the crucial part. How do you make a great cup at home? How do you unlock all that potential?
Right. Brewing it properly makes a huge difference. A few simple tips can elevate your cup from just okay to, well, fantastic.
Okay, lay 'em on.
First, water quality. Always try to use fresh, filtered water if you can. Tap water, depending on where you are, can have minerals or chlorine that really affect the taste.
Good point. Filtered water. What else?
Temperature. This is critical, especially for different types. For robust black teas, you generally want fully boiling water, 100 degrees C.
Okay.
But for delicate green and white teas, that's too hot. It'll scorch the leaves, make it taste bitter. You want cooler water, maybe around 75, 85 degrees C, like 170 185 Fahrenheit.
Right, got to cool the kettle a bit.
Exactly. And for oolongs, somewhere in between maybe 85, 90 degrees C, then measurement. How much tea?
Yeah, how much?
General rule of thumb is 1 teaspoon of loose leaf tea per cup, about 8 ounces of water. But honestly, adjust it to your own preference. Some like it stronger, some weaker.
Makes sense. And steeping time, how long do you leave it in?
That varies too. Black teas usually need 3 to 5 minutes. Green teas are much shorter, only 2 to 3 minutes usually. Any longer, and they can get astringent.
Oh, okay.
White teas often need a bit longer, maybe 4 to 5 minutes, because they're so delicate. Oolongs, maybe 3 to 4 minutes. The main thing is, don't oversteep. That's the number one cause of bitter tea.
Got it. Don't forget it's brewing.
Exactly. Set a timer if it helped.
Good advice. And then just enjoy it.
Yes. But maybe take a moment first. Smell the aroma as it brews when you pour it, then sip it. Let the different flavors come through.
Right. It sounds like following those few steps, water, temp, time, can really make you appreciate all those regional differences and nuances we talked about.
It absolutely transforms the experience, makes each cup a little moment of discovery.
Well, Ceylon tea really does sound like this treasure trove. Yeah. History, culture, incredible taste, all packed into one leaf.
It is.
Every cup tells that story, the dedication, the craft, that unique Sri Lankan terroir. It really is like a journey in a cup, based on everything you've shared with us.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with. We've talked about how Ceylon tea transformed from, you know, an answer to a farming crisis into this global icon so tied to its place and its culture.
Yeah.
How might that story, the story of this one plant, maybe inspire us? Inspire us to look around at other maybe simple everyday things in our own lives and wonder what profound stories, what unexpected resilience might be hidden there too. What other ordinary things hold extraordinary tales if we just, you know, take a moment to look a bit closer.